This podcast contains explicit language. Viewer discretion is advised.
He got the shot off! Throw it down!
He runs with the 50. He runs with the 40. The guy is drunk.
Here we go.
You're listening to the Benchwarmers and Burners podcast with your host, Josh Lozano.
Oh, shit. Here we go again.
Yo, and welcome back to another episode of the Benchwarmers and Burners podcast. I'm your host, Josh Lozano, part of the Belly Up Sports Network. Make sure to subscribe, follow, like, all that great, you know, everything that's in the show notes. But this week, I have to bring in somebody who's part of the Belly Up Sports family, one of my favorite guys to have on the podcast, and just one of my favorite guys to interact with on Twitter. Go give him a follow. It's at ParkWertz512, Parker Ainsworth of the FN Sports podcast, and he's also a teacher, so give him some love on Twitter, all right?
Hey, how's it going, Josh?
It's going well, man. I know I gave you the long intro. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been quite a year, especially as a Rockets guy, but usually my solace when I get home from school and coaching and stuff like that is like I get to come home and watch the Rockets, and it hasn't even been that pleasant lately, so I'm glad to talk about some other basketball for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, we got a fun episode for you guys, the audience. What we're going to be running through is we're going to talk about our, like, pretenders and contenders. And then we're might sneak in a little bit of the Nike situation with the sneakers app and Ann Herbert. But isn't it kind of funny that, what was it, the Rockets? Well, I'm so sorry about it. I'm not, like, enjoying the Rockets.
No, it's
pain.
Funny. It's funny.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're saying it's funny then, because it was a little bit. But what was it? The 13th loss for the Rockets was the 13th game for James. It was just, and then it's like the jersey 13th announcement.
13th consecutive. Yeah. 13th consecutive loss was to Brooklyn's number 13, James Harden, the day after they said they're going to retire his number 13. there was a lot of unlucky 13s going on there.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Fertitta, I just can't. I mean, here, we'll actually, before we get into the pretenders and contenders, I kind of have to get, because it's been a while since, I don't think I've had you on the show since that trade happened. But I mean, what's your thoughts about it now that you kind of had a little bit time for that trade to ferment? Like, did you not like it originally when it happened, and now you don't like it even more? Like, kind of like, what is the thought process being a Houston fan?
Well, so I thought it was interesting. So Stone's a new GM, and mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that he went the route where this is going to be a long rebuild. We got a bunch of picks. Mm-hmm. There was the rumored other trade that I guess was on the table and then fell through with Philly, which would have reunited Harden and Morey, but it would have been to bring in a Ben Simmons type and a couple of other auxiliary mm-hmm. pieces, which then would have been like more an immediate, like we're playing, it might not be this year, but we're playing for title with Ben Simmons and Wood the next couple of years would be the goal, right? And mm-hmm. so he went the long-term goal. So I don't know if it's easy to say, you know, who wins or loses that trade, because if one of those picks turns into like Amani Bates into it in a mm-hmm. couple of years, like, you know, who knows how you that all shakes out and who wins that. I will say I was really like more emotionally invested in like, oh, Harden's gone, back in like November when the Athletic leaked the report that he and Russell wanted out. Then like by the time the trade finally happened, I was kind of like, all right, we're moving on. Like that work, yeah. That part was pretty easy for me.
I feel that. Yeah, it's I get it too. I mean, I'm one of those guys that I think it's preposterous when people say things like, oh, Harden shouldn't get his jersey retired. I think he should. Where I draw the line is I don't think he's the greatest Rocket. I think it's Hakeem. And I know it's like a little odd for me to, because I usually like to defend the guys that I actually was able to watch, not just having to watch YouTube. But, you know, he came with a longer tenure and all that. But I like James. I'm really glad for him. He's having fun on the Nets. And that really? That's a great segue to the Brooklyn Nets. So, Parker, I'll let you open up. Are the Brooklyn Nets a contender or a pretender? I mean, you don't got to be a teacher to grade this one. This is pretty easy.
this is a contender. Mm-hmm. So you have two guys that are MVPs, one guy with two finals MVPs. I understand Durant's mm-hmm. been in and out of lineup with health. They've reeled off a bunch of wins in a row. It was like 6 out of 7 games without him, or 7 out of 8 games without him. Their defense is not great. If you look at like the first 7 games versus the second 7 games since the Harden trade, the big loss there was Jared Allen, right? But if you look at that split mm-hmm. and where they cut in half, they've gotten better, and they just need to be like maybe a little worse than average, honestly, with how great that offense is. They're sharing the ball well. It's easy to share the ball when you're winning, mm-hmm. I guess. But I would say for sure contender. I mean, if we want to get down to nitty gritty and picks and stuff, but like they're definitely in the hunt. What do you think?
Oh, no, I 100%. I think that I was super high on Philly before the season. And then, you know, once, you know, when you make a prediction and then it goes well, you ride it high. But I can say without confidence that it's like, I think the Nets are the team to beat. And from what they've showed me, and I pulled it up, the Nets are 12-6 without Kevin Durant holistically. And their defensive rating before was atrocious. But now they got, like, as I'm looking at it, they're within a top 10 defense. And the last 18 championships that have been won, you need at least a top 11 offense and defense. Obviously, you need a little bit better, you know, than 11-11. You can't just be, riding the line. But I don't know. I just think that the Nets are... And then the thing about it, too, is if you've watched... Like, you don't even have to know basketball, but if you watch enough playoff basketball, you'll understand that, you know, there's 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock. The play breaks down. You can understand that what they're trying to do. But then sometimes you just need a guy like Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard that'll get you that basket when, you know, the play breaks down. And luckily, the Nets have three.
Completely. The other thing, too, is that happens more and more as the series goes on, mm-hmm. right? Because in game five, you've kind of done the scouting report and played each other 4 times. So that happens earlier in the game. By game seven, like, you've thrown your counter punches, like those isolation, I need a guy and get a bucket plays happen a lot more as the playoff series drags on. And they got 3 guys that can do it as well as anyone. I mean, mm-hmm. it's tough to beat.
No, it is a very tough team to beat. And then there's a lot of things that are great for the Nets. To me, there's not that many bad things. I think a lot of the bad things are more kind of like superlatives or things that, they're not really on the court type of issues that people like to sling at the Nets. Because I feel like everyone, like, you know, a lot of the media is like, oh, well, all three of them be able to play. There's only one ball. And then we could see James Harden's playing probably the most complete style of play. He fit perfectly as the de facto point guard of that team, which then let Kyrie be what kind of role he wants to be, which is a shooting guard. And then, as you can see, they don't, and, you know, Kate, which is crazy that, you know, KD's coming off an Achilles injury, and you could argue he's the best player on that team, and he's not even playing. It's like, when you just see all these things, you're just like, it's a hard team to beat. They also got a first year head coach in Steve Nash, who, when, like, a young couple gets a house and then people are like, oh, that's a lot of house, can you handle it? It's like, for Steve Nash, like, that's a lot of team, can you handle that? But I think he's the perfect type of coach to lead 3 superstars, because you don't want something so rigid, you know? Because you just let these guys play. So I love the Nets.
Well, and he's got D'Antoni on his bench with him.
His retirement.
Yeah, completely. D'Antoni completely made the connection between Harden and Nash mm-hmm. back when D'Antoni got hired in Houston, right? He was talking about, I'm going to turn him into a point guard. He led the league in assists that year. Like, it would be one thing if, like, Kyrie couldn't shoot threes, like some point guards that are, like, just attacking kind of guys, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they can all catch and shoot too, so you can't, like, sack off of any of them. Joe Harris is shooting over 50% from mm-hmm. three. I mean, see, what, a couple of days ago, I don't know if he's dropped, but, like, those guys, they're just, that's a tough team to beat. You're going to have to outscore them, and they can score a lot of points.
Yeah. One thing, though, about the Nets that I am going to be kind of curious about is they do rank 28th in the league for paint defense. The only teams that are better, worse than them, are Minnesota and Sacramento. So it's definitely not a list you want to be on. What everyone's always saying is, like, you know, because, you know, we talked about all the reasons we love the Nets, and I can go on, but let's, because we don't want to make this just all about them, let's talk about briefly about what might cause them a hiccup. And I think that is that interior defense. I'm really curious to see what would happen. Now, talent wise, if they match up against a team like Philly, I think that, you know, the scale is in Brooklyn's side. But when you have an issue, like, let's just say DeAndre Jordan gets 2 quick fouls against Joel Embiid, now it's like, okay, you're one guy that you could play to maybe possibly slow him down. Now you have to throw Jeff Green on him, or possibly, because you like playing KD at the five, which I do love that lineup, would you want to risk putting KD out there against someone like Joel Embiid? And then, you know, your thought process is like, oh, it's fine, he's not going to be out there. But, you know, they don't have Al Horford out there anymore. It's like the backup for is another bruiser who likes to get your guy in foul trouble, Dwight Howard. So I think Philly's a team that, styles make fight. I think they're a team that could match up really, really well against them.
Philly has the size. If mm-hmm. they, you know, like you're saying, if DeAndre's going to play really well that series, mm-hmm. or the Nets just outscore them. And then the other team with size too is between Lopez and Giannis. Milwaukee offers size mm-hmm. problems too. And that's the 1-2-3, right? Those are not just like three random teams. Those are three yeah. of the top teams currently as we speak in the Eastern Conference in terms of record. And I think that the deal there will just come down to is a series where they're going to play their style of basketball. One team's going to, I hate to make it a make or miss league, but like mm-hmm. if the Nets are hitting a bunch of threes and you're hitting a bunch of post up twos, you got to hit a lot more shots than they do, you know? And mm-hmm. they're going to, I mean, D'Antoni clearly rode with that in Houston. Nash is a first year coach. I don't know how many playoff experience of what he would do as a coach, as a player. That's what the Suns, you know, rode with in the mid 2000s. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that's what they would do. They may go hit the buyout market for a Drummond or a Blake or some other size, but I don't know that they have a trade target in mind for that kind of a guy.
Yeah, that's the thing. I know some people were linking Drummond because it's exciting. I don't see it. I think if Drummond was going to get traded, it'd have to be Boston just because they have that huge trade exception, which is the yeah. biggest trade exception in NBA history. I think it's like $28 million or something like that, which ironically is almost exactly the salary of Andre Drummond. So it's like, come on, Danny Ainge, what are you doing? Just do it already. Oh, everyone who has Drummond in their fantasy league, you know, I'm trying to help you right now.
Completely. Well, and the deal is they have him just sitting until then, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, if he's in your fantasy team, you really want him. Boston's interesting because they're going to make a move, right? Like there yeah. is something just that's going to happen.
Yeah.
They're currently, you know, are they playing tonight? Because right now I have them at 18-17 in the fourth seed. Mm-hmm. And they could, you know, if they make a move, I saw something today about Vucevic, who is an all-star big and stretches the floor too. If they added some size that could compete with the size in Milwaukee or the size with Philadelphia, they've got their fair share of scores mm-hmm. in the backcourt between Brown and Tatum. And so does that become a team that can play both styles? And we just talked about a couple big teams and then the Nets being a perimeter-oriented team. If mm-hmm. they were to add size, you know, maybe Boston can get up there in that same kind of conversation. But that's talking about moves they have to make that we're just projecting they're going to, I guess.
Yeah, it's like it's funny, more people do research for trades than Danny Ainge actually does. Danny Ainge just likes hoarding his assets. But I agree. I think if Vucci Main, if he did get shipped off to Boston, I think that would be perfect because he's a guy who's always been he's almost kind of like DeMarcus Cousins of the West, which is like, but he actually made the playoffs. I don't think Cousins ever made the playoffs while on the Kings. I know he made it on the Pelicans, but he didn't end up playing because he was just AD. But, you know, Vooch has been the staple of, he was kind of like the throwaway of the Dwight Howard trade. And then he ended up being, you know, the next greatest Magic player for 10 years or so, or however long he's been around. And then now it's like, I think if he was traded to Boston, he would be wanting to play for a playoff team. And he's like a perfect type of big for that. He's a great rebounder, great floor spacer, decent passer, and he is a big body. And I agree with you. I think Boston has the perimeter-oriented guys. Because imagine if you run a lineup with, you know, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Well, you know, that's definitely not Kyrie, Kevin Durant, and James Harden. But those are three guys that probably in the league that I would have, you know, a lot of confidence that at least they'll be able to slow those guys down.
It's a much more defensive minded lineup.
Yeah.
It's not that they're lacking in scoring, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a team that could sneak up on someone, but they're going to bleed baskets inside to anyone just in the same way mm-hmm. Brooklyn went without the Brooklyn offense. So,
yeah. So that's tough. Celtics are a really interesting one. Here, let's talk about the other two teams. We can talk about Milwaukee and the 76ers. I kind of want to give a shout out to Jrue Holiday because it was confirmed because the NBA kind of likes to be sneaky about it. Well, they'll be like COVID protocol. And then after a while, they'll announce like, oh, Dennis Schroeder, he actually didn't have COVID, but he was with someone who did. And Jrue Holiday, I think Middleton just let it slip that he actually had it. So it was really impressive that his first game back, he was, you know, checking Kwai. And this guy's like, yeah. you know, huffing and puffing. You hear stories of people that are like, yeah, I get winded going up the stairs with groceries and they're asking Jrue Holiday to clamp up Kawhi. So what's your thoughts about Milwaukee? They kind of had a slow start. Giannis is having a sneaky MVP season, but no one wants to talk about it because of voter fatigue. And, you know, I get it. You know, two-time MVP, two-time defensive player of the year.
And the voter fatigue is so real because
100%.
If he, not to go back to James Harden, as a Houston guy, though, if he lost the MVP in 2019 to Harden,
Yeah.
Right. Because that was the year he averaged 35 or something stupid. Right. I don't think there'd be any question that we'd be all talking about Giannis this year. If Giannis just had a one MVP, oh yeah, he could get a second this year. The deal about giving him a third, like, whoa. yeah. I was really impressed in Milwaukee against LA because that was probably the fourth or fifth time I got to watch them play. And like, you know,
I really watching them play,
More like a whole game, like more or less start to finish. Right. And watching that one, it's like the third or fourth different defensive coverage they were running with. And then I think that my thing there is that, so that they didn't run a drop on Kawhi. And then they were doing a lot of more traditional switching with perimeter guys and keeping Giannis away from him. And so they wouldn't switch Giannis. They wouldn't switch Giannis. They wouldn't switch Lopez. But they do a lot of switching with Middleton, a lot of switching with Drew, a lot of switching with their other like long rangey guys. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's interesting there is that they weren't, they were just straight 55 switching before that. And they were doing a lot more traditional drop earlier than that in the season. And I think it's interesting that they can be the third place team in the Eastern Conference in terms of their record while changing things up throughout the year, right? Like if you are really mixing things up that much, your goals are clearly bigger than the regular season because you're trying to like see what you like where, but you're also still winning a lot of the games. And, and so I think that that's a sneaky thing. Cause again, Milwaukee is a team that they've had the best record in the regular season before. They've done all the offensive and defensive split stats and those kinds of things before. Their goals are bigger than that right now. Right. And so I, much like my, we hadn't done the Western Conference yet, but much like my hesitation will be with Utah. When it comes to Coach Bud, we get to a 7-game series. We talk about punch, counterpunch, punch, counterpunch. I have yet to see a definitively good counterpunch out of him, right? Like he gets in a series, they play their cards, the other coach does something, and he either does something that doesn't work on his counterpunch back, or
he just does what he
don't do it.
He does what was working in the regular season. That is the big knock on Bud. And that's kind of been a personality trait from him since even when he was running those fantastic Atlanta Hawk team that somehow snuck in four All-Stars. Because you remember, it's like Jeff Teague, you know, Kyle Korver, Al Horford. Was it Damari Carroll? I don't know. But it was the four All-Stars. And then I am glad about the switching. That is one thing, though. I hate when, you know, people always complain about like regular season losses, because I'm like, this is the time you should experiment. This is the time you should be throwing out these crazy, you know, monkey wrench style lineups or throwing these different defenses. Because then when it comes playoff time, you know, when, you know, it like shit hits the fan, you don't want it to be the first time that you're trying something. So I like that with the Bucks.
Especially for a team like the Bucks, like the Sixers, like the Lakers, teams that know they're going to make the playoffs. Like, we're not talking about the Charlotte Hornets mixing a bunch of stuff up. They need to figure out who they are, right? And like teams that are really trying to like do this for the first time is a whole different thing than when you're like making another or a third or a fourth run at something.
No, 100%. I really like Milwaukee. I'm Giannis has taken a, I think he's taken like a it's hard to say he's taken a step, but he's always taken a step every year. Giannis is one of those guys. He's just a super hard worker. He's progressively taking, gotten better. The only thing is like, he's just got to, you know, get those free throws and 3-point number up. But I don't know. It could be like a mental thing, or it could go back to, there's a, that theory that's just like NBA players with huge hands just aren't good shooters. That's why Rajon Rondo, he's always been really bad at his free throws and 3-pointers, unless it's the NBA finals or playoffs for some reason. It's the only time. Then next thing, the guy's like a 40% shooter from deep, but
playoff Rondo.
What's your thoughts about Chris Middleton? Because he's having a career year, but when I watch Chris Middleton, sometimes I just wish he was more aggressive. Because I'm like, you are so efficient and you're so good. And you're
yeah.
Sometimes when they were out with Drew Holiday, I was like, wow, you are the best playmaker that they have. I don't know why. Because they're always like at the end of the games, their go-to is always, you know, Chris Middleton, Giannis pick and roll. Like that's what they're gonna go to every time. It's just like, and they're gonna murder you with it. But then sometimes I watch these Milwaukee games and Middleton like. First half of the game, Middleton's only taken two shot attempts. And it's like, that's just, you just can't, you know, you can't do that.
He's fascinating. So I likened him the other day to Tim Duncan. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because they're both boring. I know what you mean. He doesn't do anything flashy, doesn't make mistakes, but up high, like you're saying, hyper efficient numbers, all-star level caliber offensive and defensive player. He's not an all defensive team player, but he's certainly a good defender.
Like, you don't want to hunt him. Yeah.
And he's long, and he's just kind of quietly there with Giannis in this small market of Milwaukee, and they're both signed up to be there for a long time, and they do a lot of winning without rings so far. And so, you know, theoretically, that's going to translate at some point. The difference, I guess, was Tim Duncan Tim Duncan did it in June. And so like, we think about him as being this like more successful player, but in a lot of ways, they're really similar. And it's not always one or two guys' fault they don't get to June. Right. So I'm not sure I can hold that against Chris. We talked about Drew Holiday's defense. I was impressed with Chris Middleton and Paul George on the other side of the perimeter on Sunday as well against LA. Chris is good. He's really, really good. It's just not super flashy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not really super flashy. That Tim Duncan analogy is great. Is it, you know, maybe it's because Mike Budenholzer just doesn't crack. He just doesn't, you know, he doesn't crack that belt like Popovich does. You know, I can see Popovich just grabbing Tim by the shirt, you know, in the locker room. I don't still see Bud doing that win. Because I feel like if Popovich had Middleton, you would be telling him to shoot more. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, and he'd probably also tell Giannis to get his butt on the block. So who knows?
Yeah, tell Brook Lopez to stop taking those corner threes. If you tell him. All right. Here. So we haven't really talked about Philly. I definitely want to make some time for that. Is there any other team in the East that you consider as a possible real contender? Me, Miami, maybe, but I feel like they've been decimated with like just so much injuries this year, and with COVID, Jimmy lost that 20 pounds, that they're definitely not a team I would want to face in the playoffs. You know, especially like the worst case scenario is they're a low seed, like things don't break their way. They're an 8 seed, they face the Nets first, or you know, they're a 7 seed and you gotta face, you know, you're the Bucks and you gotta face them again. So they're definitely a team I don't want to see if I was an opposing, but do you think they're a team that could make another run like they did last year?
I think the first 2-ish weeks after the All-Star break, tells us a lot about them because they've had, you know, a lot of, you mentioned COVID, they had other injuries as well. And then because of that, because not great win-loss record, Bam and Jimmy missed the All-Star game. And that typically goes one of two ways for guys that make it 1 year and miss the next, or feel like they got snubbed or whatever. Like, you know, Beal got snubbed a year ago and he's been on fire since, right? And guys either elevate their games or they get pissed and sulk. I get the impression Jimmy's an elevate his game kind of guy. I get the impression Bam is an elevate his game kind of guy. And so I could see them playing very well the rest of the way. The deal is, does the rest of the team raise their level and match it, right? Like, does Ty Hero become bubble Tyler Hero? Does Kelly Olynyk become a more playable guy? He's only getting like 12 or 14 minutes right now. And so do those kinds of guys step their game up? They're the only team currently in the bottom half of the playoff picture that I would give that kind of credence to. I know that Jade's going to kill me about Toronto. My big deal with Toronto is that they're playing in Tampa. And I think that as you get to the playoffs, frankly, maybe it's because I'm living in Texas, but it feels like everything's going to be opened up by then. And so home crowds will be a factor, and not having a home crowd could hurt them. Frankly, they have 100%. Like small, it feels like a visitor crowd because people in Tampa are coming to watch basketball, but when they come to watch the Lakers play the Raptors, they're coming to watch LeBron. When they come to watch the Nets play the Raptors in the playoffs, they're going to be showing up to watch KD and the Nets. It's not, they're no tie to the team. Right. And so I feel like that could hurt them in a playoff series more than people are letting on. I understand they had to do what they had to do about getting it out of Canada every time for a game or whatever, but that's just the way the cookie crumbles. So I give it to Miami as far as team not there. I think there's a very good chance that by like Easter or a couple weeks after the All-Star break or whatever, like we're talking about, ooh, that was a bad pick, Parker. But that's the only team I could feel comfortable picking below that right now.
No, I don't think we're going to be looking that. That's a bad pick because possibly I don't think it's going to happen. But you know, a lot of people have been saying Lowry's going to get traded. Lowry's going to get traded. We'll see possibly. But you know, if he gets shipped, it's like, how good can this, you know, cause he's like the heart and soul of Toronto, but the Tampa Raptors, but I agree with you that, cause I knew that they weren't going to come out as hot because they weren't playing in their home location. You know, it's unfamiliar. They're basically playing away games. Like, and then think about it. You're worried about your family, either your family stayed in Toronto or they came with you. That's another stress you have to deal with, that, you know, you didn't have to deal with before. You're separated from your family. You got to find a place to stay. Like, are you going to rent? Are you gonna, like, what, you can't just stay in a hotel the whole time. Like this is all like unnecessary things that other teams didn't have to deal with. It's unfamiliar. So like, I understood that they were going to have a slow start. I just didn't think it was going to be that slow because, and you know, they had other things, issues with it too. A lot of guys were missing time. You know, OG missed a ton of time in the middle part. In the beginning, it felt like once they got Lowry back, Siakam would get out for a game. Or then once Siakam came back, it'd be like Fred was gone. They're also another team I don't want to, I would prefer not to see, but I fear Miami. I feel like Miami has a puncher's chance at possibly upsetting one of the upper teams. Then I could see Toronto because of what you said with that they're playing in Tampa. If this was in Toronto, I would be saying something totally different, but it's kind of what the cards are dealt. All right, before we'll talk about Philly real quick, and then I'll run a quick ad, and then we'll switch to the West. But I love the Sixers. I'm super, super high on them. I think Embiid is, you know, he's like the parallel of Jokic. They're both having MVP seasons. We would be talking about Jokic like Embiid if they had the wins, but they don't. The supporting cast for the Sixers are doing great. Doc Rivers is doing exactly what Doc Rivers does with that hoarse voice of his. He's like rallies the guys. Doc Rivers is a fantastic, like, wartime type of speech guy. Like, every team I've ever heard, they love playing for Doc Rivers. Like, Doc Rivers knows how to rally the troops. They're playing really well. The question is, though, which we know is, like, Doc Rivers, you know, come playoff time, you know, when the shit hits the fan, he's kind of starts to crumble. So we'll really see what the makeup of the Sixers team is during the playoffs. What are your thoughts about him? I'm high. I think they're a legit contender. What about you?
Well, I think Doc Rivers needs to really hope they don't get up 3-1 on someone, because that's clearly his weakness. I think it's interesting because the team's orchestration, the way it's put together, is a great combination of Doc and Maury, and that Doc is this like classic toughness, not just because he has a scratchy voice, but like that kind of a guy. Old school, but it's not that he doesn't understand the new game. He's just kind of old school and a lot of those kind of, and then Maury is threes and layups, right? And so you're seeing the combination of two things there. Joel is clearly playing it like an MVP, and I'd imagine if they handed it out today, he wins it, right? Just he's best guy, best team, whatever, right? Or best team in the East, and he's the best guy. I think the big thing for them will also be matchups in playoff series. They're built to match up well against a lot of teams, so I don't mean to say that they're going to run into issues, but I think that the deal will be Joel and Ben and how they match up and what kind of coverage you see against them, because I think Milwaukee offers interesting size defensively that could mess with them, because we all know Ben doesn't shoot jumpers, and so they're going to turn him into a facilitator.
Yeah.
And then as they're facilitating, it's like, are they living with Maxi and Seth Curry? I don't think you live with Seth Curry shooting. You might live with a Maxi type guy shooting. I don't know. I think that those kinds of things are all on the periphery. But if I guess Joel's going to get his 50 and whatever like he did against Chicago the other night, that was nuts.
His 40 and 20. Yeah.
I think that there's reason to think they can beat Brooklyn if that becomes the matchup. And again, that would be, I guess, currently the Eastern Conference Finals matchup. My deal there is, do you get to a point there where experience matters, like playing experience in that matters?
And I think it does.
And I don't mean to be cliche about like, oh, rings culture or whatever, but like Durant has a couple rings. Kyrie has a ring. You've got Harden's been to his conference finals. D'Antoni's coaching his several conference finals between Houston and Phoenix. You know, like I think that those guys have all been there before, where this Philadelphia team, which should encourage Philadelphia fans, is really relatively young, right? Ben Simmons is still not very old, and Joel Embiid is still not very old, and they rely a lot on the Maxi kid.
Yeah, their bench Curry. Is really young too. Tybalt's playing minutes, Maxi's playing minutes, and not just like filler minutes. Like they're out there.
Yeah. And so with the exception of like Danny Green, who gets more minutes than I thought he was going to get when they signed him, I'm being really honest.
That's what everyone always says.
But like the minutes Dwight Howard gets, if you're a long-term, lifelong Philly fan, can be replaced by another bench big. Like it's not. He's not doing anything crazy that someone else can't do. What's crazy about Dwight Howard is that he's still doing those kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
And so I guess my thought there is like this could be another punch in the chin here for Philly if they got to that point where kind of like it did when the Kawhi hit that shot a couple years back. That said, they've got a guy that we just said is going to win the MVP. They've got another all-star at a he's listed at 6'10 on Basketball Reference. 6'11 on Basketball Reference. Ben Simmons, they got a 6'11 point guard. Like
Tobias is kind of playing like Chris Middleton. if you just look at the stats and cover the picture.
So the truth is that like I sit here and say like I would probably pit. I mean, you're the one in Vegas, so I'm not gambling. But if I were to put money on, I'd put it on Brooklyn. But I certainly wouldn't like be surprised if Philly came out of the East or something.
Yeah. Well, that pretty much wraps up for me on my Eastern contenders, because I really just have it's like Sixers, Nets, Bucks, possibly Celtics if they make the right trade to get a big. Heat are one of those guys I think that they could knock out a contender, And Raptors, they're also a team that could have been or should have been in there, but, you know, circumstances. So that's kind of my order. It looks like we kind of agree on that.
Yeah.
And then a quick word from our sponsors.
Support for the Benchwarmers and Burners podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision. You know what? You hear that? Listen, I'm going off the script. That's how much I actually like Manscaped. I don't even need this script. Listen, Manscaped hooked me up with a bunch of tools and formulations from their Perfect Package 3.0 kit that includes this Space Age Lawnmower Ball Trimmer 3.0. This trimmer features cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. Listen, you'll be able to trim those family jewels with confidence, like Steph Curry has confidence at the free throw line. Listen, this trimmer even comes with an LED light. It's waterproof. But we should be sending this to Mars. Please stop using the same razor on your face that you use for the lower body. We're not Neanderthals. That's just gross. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BNB. That's the letters BNB at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code BNB. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
Talking about the West contenders, we'll just start off with the number one in the West, Jazz, which, because the rest of the teams, you know, like Clippers, Lakers, like I'm assuming we're going to agree on. There's other teams like the Suns and the Jazz that are a little bit more interesting, or the, like even the Nuggets, the 7-seed Nuggets. The Jazz, 27-9, as we're recording this, they just lost to the number one seed in the East to a crazy game. Wild, because Donovan Mitchell was saying, this stuff always happens to the Jazz. We don't get respect from the refs. And it's like, dude, you would not be 27-9 if you weren't getting calls. But I do agree with you. I do agree with you that, you know, Utah sometimes doesn't get the love it deserves, especially from like the media and all that. But what's your thoughts about this team? Because they, you know, they shoot a lot of threes. And more importantly, they make a lot of their threes, which is, you know, the great equalizer to the fact that they don't have that A1 type of superstar yet. Because we're not really sure if Donovan Mitchell will get there at some point, but I can say with confidence that, you know, he's just not that like Kawhi, LeBron, KD, Embiid, Jokic tier this season. Could be at some point, just not, you know, he's not there yet.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's interesting to look at the Jazz. As I look at the Jazz, my biggest thing, honestly, and I said this back when they got the one seed, I kind of alluded to it talking about Coach Bud a second ago. Is that I'm out on the regular season Jazz. I've seen, and I don't mean that to like dismiss how great they've been, because they really have been. But it my issues with them as I look at Jazz basketball comes in when they get into a playoff series and they need to make adjustments. And I don't know if that's a Snyder thing or if it's the roster wasn't as flexible the last few years. To be fair, Bogey missed the bubble, and that might have been big, because they blew that 3-1 lead, which is what I'm alluding to kind of, but they blew that 3-1 lead. And then that Nuggets team they blew a 3-1 lead to gets the Western Conference Finals. So I guess you could argue that they maybe should have been there instead. But as I look at this team, they've got the shooting, they've got the defense. You know, I don't know who you'd pick as defense player of the year. Gobert would get votes for sure, right?
He's number one. Vegas odds has him as the clear-cut favorite so far.
As the clear-cut. So as I look at Donovan, I don't know if Donovan's shoulder.
I don't know why. I just heard the teacher voice. Yeah.
What am I supposed to call him? Anyway, as I look at Donovan Mitchell, my deal there is we talked about with the Brooklyn KD Harden Kyrie thing about how great it is to have three options to be that guy. If it comes down to crunching time, you've got to have a guy with a bucket. He's the guy. Some games he does that, some games he doesn't. He is also just 24 years old, so I don't mean to dog him too hard.
No, I feel
When you get to last year's playoffs or the two seasons before playoffs, and each series, they came out with some sort of a weird strategy. In the 2018 playoffs, they were trying to double Harden before he crossed half court. Right against the Rockets. They lost that series in five games and gave up 50 points in a quarter once and 46 in a different quarter in a different game. Like it didn't work. They didn't change. Right. The next year they get to see the Rockets again. They do the deal where they put their guard behind Harden and are trying to push him into Gobert for the floater. Well, the only game that Harden went off in that series was the game the Rockets lost, but it was a five game series. The Houston won the series in five games. They never changed. Like they shut down James Harden, but it didn't win the series and they never adjusted. And then last year they get up 3-1. They the Nuggets go from point Jokic to a Jamal Murray oriented style of offense.
And he just torches them.
They never adjusted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just torched them. And so again, that's, you know, very easy, visible things that they don't pay me to coach an NBA team. I'm saying I have the fix to hand to Quinn Snyder. But until they can make those adjustments successfully, I'm waiting to see them do it because they may get out of the first. I don't mean they're going to like be in the first round this year. So if they're the one seed when it all said and done, they'll play the winner or they'll play the winner for the AZ because of the play-in games, which right now is slotted as Dallas. I'm not saying that they lose to Luka, although Luka is a tough matchup in the first round.
Or the Warriors or the Nuggets.
In the second round, in the second round, they currently would be playing, the favorite would be the Clippers, right? That's tough. Like that's like the Clippers and Lakers are kind of like we talked about with some of the teams of the East, where like they're experimenting, having fun right now. They're making sure Davis gets healthy in LA, or they're making sure they fit Batum in right in the Clippers locker room. But they know what they're looking for, right? And so I would be worried about Quinn Snyder and the Jazz making that adjustment. Maybe they prove me wrong, but that would be my worry with them.
No, I agree with you too. And then if they had a healthy Mike Conley, like the Mike Conley that we kind of see this year, maybe things would have gone different. They would have not blown that 3-1 lead. But I agree with you. I think that Quinn Snyder's always been one of those guys where he gets you a lot of regular season wins. Does he make the correct adjustments during the playoffs? Not from what I've seen. At least he makes adjustments, because I feel like, you know, the knock on Bud was that he was just so, he just wouldn't even, attempt it. But at least Quinn is it the right decision? I think it kind of really, it must, the Jazz don't think like this because no NBA player thinks like this. But I know for Jazz fans, they're probably like, man, we worked so hard to get this big lead for the first seed, and the Lakers or the Clippers aren't even number two. And it's like that completely ruined, because our plan where it was like, we're going to force, if we work hard in the regular season and do our work now, then we're going to get rewarded that we only have to face the Laker or the Clipper, one of those teams, because they're going to have to face each other if they're the second and third, you know? But it kind of throws a monkey wrench when the Suns are the second, because now it's like, now you might end up having to still face the Clippers and the Lakers both. But you know, the NBA players don't think like that. They're not like, oh, I'm hoping for this. You know, they might think like that, but they don't overtly. But I know fans are. Yeah. Because we're humans, you know? It's like, so that's something that's kind of interesting. The Suns are a team that they look like they're going to string a lot of wins. They're riding high from that the bubble where they didn't lose. Monty Williams was getting some pre-coach of the year votes even before the season started because of what he was doing with the bubble. Because they're like, look what he's doing, and they don't even have Kelly. Ayton's still kind of recovering. Now you add Chris Paul to that mix, and they're just a tough team to play against. Mikal Bridges has been a great two-way player. He's starting to look like he has the potential to, you know, someday be like the premier style lockdown perimeter guy. What's your thoughts about Phoenix? Because I'm thinking Phoenix and Utah, especially because Phoenix isn't a team that's, you know, Booker's never made it to the playoffs. They're not really doing the whole Clipper-Laker thing where, like, you know, they gave 4 weeks of PTO to Anthony Davis. The Clippers are out here, like, Paul George is not playing today because of dizziness, which, I mean, like, I'm not trying to, like, knock him. That's not an insult. I'm just saying, you know, the Clippers and the Lakers, they're being very liberal with how they rest their guys, or they're trying crazy weird lineups, you know, which I don't think the Suns or Jazz are doing. I think that, you know, the Suns might actually hold on to that second seed.
The Suns are a ton of fun. And so when I watched the Suns, I went back and forth to a guy on Twitter. He's in Rockets Twitter. And so we're talking about Rockets things and how similar this Suns team. It's almost and I don't mean to dismiss the guys, it's almost an insult. It's like a bargain bin version of that 17-18 Rockets team that won 65 games, right? So Chris Paul shows up and he's Chris Paul. But yeah, at the other spot,
you've got but he's Chris Paul from that Rockets team,
Right. Mm-hmm. You got Chris Paul. He's a little bit older, but you've got a rim running big in Ayton that like is just going to run for lobs. You've got Devin Booker, a crazy scoring two guard, right? Like he can go off legitimately for 70. And then at that 3-4 spot, you've got the Jay Crowder. You've got Mikal Bridges. You've got Cam Johnson. These like long rangey guys.
Sarge comes in. Yeah.
Three, right? Like that, like they're just good basketball players, and that creates problems. And it's really weirdly put together. They clearly have that Chris Paul swag in them. you know, I think that all of Phoenix, you're closer to Phoenix, I guess, geographically than me, but I feel like all of Phoenix is feeling like there's this like Booker hate, 'cause he didn't get voted in the, or picked in the All-Star game this year. He had to get on the second wave after Davis or whatnot, but that's a really well put together team. And I don't mean to freak everything back to Houston, but Chris Paul makes me. And I think the deal for them will be, is it's like you're saying, they're going to be like the Bucks 3 years ago, where they play super well in the regular season. They learn a lot. They get there. They win the first round, because the first round, they get a 7 seed or whatever as the 2 seed or however that shakes out. But then they get to play, like right now they match up with LeBron, right? So LeBron and the Lakers would get to game plan a 7-game series for Booker. And I'm putting my money on LeBron there. Or if it's Kawhi, it's like Kawhi's going to clamp up Devin Booker, and like Pat Beverley will do enough against Chris Paul. Like those are just kind of matchups that I don't know how much farther than that I have him going.
Yeah, I agree with you too. I think it's one of those, like, their timeline isn't, this is not a championship right now timeline, if that makes any sense. And you do have Chris Paul, who has a, you know, a expiration date at some point. We don't know when, like, because people have been trying to say that, you know, Chris Paul's done every year, but he just keeps coming back. But, you know, Devin Booker, first time, I think that the Suns, is, it's just like their mindset's like, let's just, you know, put a winning competitive season, go to the playoffs, try and do some damage. But, you know, obviously the players themselves don't think like that. They're thinking, oh, we can win a championship. But I think as an organization, they're still waiting. But I agree with you. I think that they're really fun to watch. They're a great team. They play hard every single night. And I agree with you about that Chris Paul swag, because they're just not a dumb team. They make really smart plays. And you could even see the maturation of what Chris Paul brings, because Devin Booker is now stealing some of, you know, Chris Paul's typical, like, how he attacks the basket on the mid range. And then he just pull, And then like the different little fakes he does, or like the, like, you know, when he, well, Trae Young stole it the most, but you know, when they'll stop and they'll let the guard back into you, while you're as you're dribbling to get that easy foul to rip through. Just a bunch of just a bunch of little things that you're just like, oh, that's a Chris Paul, you know, like with in Oklahoma too, you saw it. It's sort of like where they would just be stealing Chris Paul's, like the rip through. If the guy tries to check you with your hand out, it's like just whoop, just do that. It's like, if you do that 5 times, we'll get some free throws.
even down to the part where last year, I think it was Oklahoma City, Chris Paul, where he pointed out and got an extra free throw or something because someone's jersey was untucked.
Yeah, someone's jersey's untucked. Yeah.
I was like, only Chris Paul does that. Like,
yeah, but that's great. I think it's like perfect. This is the best player that Devin Booker's ever played with.
For sure.
When you think about it. And then Ayton's going to develop. I think that they're like a hurdle for other teams. I really like them. I just don't think that they're kind of like almost with the Jazz with me, where it's like they have the pieces, but it's like, I don't think Booker and Mitchell are there yet to really, because to come out of that gauntlet in the West or even in the East with you're going to need, like, you know, like when the playoffs come, you're going to need like a quad level LeBron performance, and not just like one night, you know, because Mitchell and guys like Jamal Murray can give you that like one night. You need that consistent in a 7-game series, like every single night they're come out and they're just, you know, ball busting. So it's going to be very interesting. All right, the other two, Clippers and Lakers. We talk about them really quick. And is there any other team in the West that you like? Other than the Clippers and the Lakers.
Right, so we're still going to do Clippers and Lakers. I don't understand how the Nuggets lose so many games. I think it's one of those things too, where we talk about Joel being the clear cut MVP. If you were handed out today, or at least he'd be mine, I guess. I don't mean to speak and put words in your mouth, but I think the deal is, if the award traditionally did not go to the best guy on the best team, right? If the award did not traditionally go to someone with a great record, Jokic is playing as well as anyone in the league. And I think that the deal that hurts him is we've only given it to somebody below the like fourth seed, or on the team below the fourth seed,
like
the
Westbrook.
Time we gave it to Russell Westbrook, right? and he had a historic triple double year, right? Like that was what it took.
They said it was never going to happen again, and then it's like, we have to give it to him. When is this ever going to happen again? And then he did it the next year. It's like, okay, well, we can't. We're not going to give it to him this time.
But. Right. It felt kind of like a mistake. Because of that, like, we're never like, and they were a sixth seed, right? And he had he had all of the empathy in the world because they just lost to Rand, and he did the triple double thing, and he was a sixth seed, and it was competitive with he and Harden and Kawhi that year, right? I just don't see Jokic getting that award at the seventh seed, but they have really good players and they're ought to be winning more games. And I don't understand what the deal is. I know that they're it feels like the names are old, but they're really not that old between Murray and Jokic and so on. You know, Porter Jr. is a second, really a second year player. I guess he's kind of a third because he missed some time. He missed his whole first year, whatever. But I don't know why that they're not winning more games. And so if they were to win a lot more games in the second half, it's a long way to say, if they were to win a lot more games in the second half and shoot up the rankings or whatever, I could see it. Then the other team I'll say, and then I'll be quicker on them, I promise, is Portland. Portland getting McCollum back is going to be big whenever that happens. I don't know the exact date they're targeting on that, but they were lights out with him. McCollum was playing tremendous basketball before he got hurt. It was really a shame to see it hit. I think it was his foot, right? And Dame is Dame, and it's a tough place to play if they start letting fans back in. And if McCollum's back in as he was before, I certainly don't want to play Dame time. That I would not want to play them in a first round. I certainly don't want it coming down to the buzzer. So
no, I agree with you too. And then Portland's one of those teams because CJ at the beginning of the year, which it's crazy to think about because, you know, Dame is now playing. He's like a fringe MVP candidate. Not, you know, the term's usually fringe also, but he's fringe MVP. It's like, oh, he would be in the argument if they had more wins, blah, 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 blah. But CJ was actually playing better than Dame was at the first beginning 2 weeks of the season. And then he got, you know, that foot injury. He's in a walking boot. And then also Nurk, too, because they don't have him. They have to been playing the revolving door defense that is Enes Kanter. But, who's, you know, he's a phenomenal offensive player. But
Yeah,
it's just like what he gives you on offense doesn't make up for what he... and it always seems like he always comes back to Portland somehow. This is like, what, his like third stint, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he goes on a vacation to the East. He'll like play for Boston, then come back to Portland, and then he'll go play somewhere else and come back to Portland. But their team, I don't want to see either. The thing about the Nuggets, Jokic, MVP, to me, he's my MVP. But if I had a vote, I obviously couldn't vote for him because he's a seventh seed. But I think he's having a better season statistically than LeBron and Embiid, which is crazy to think about because Embiid's balling out. Yeah. But Jokic is almost averaging close to a triple double, you know, if you just give him one extra assist, and he's, you know, and he's doing it off shooting splits of like 55. And I don't know, man, it's just, it's like, you know what would be perfect for them if they had like a Jeremiah Grant type of player, but when would they ever find a guy like that?
They were really good with him a year ago. Yeah, they're missing the long range defender for sure.
Yeah, like if they would have had like the like what he's doing in Detroit right now, if they would have had that kind of guy. And I get it, you bet on Michael Porter Jr. and you expect him to kind of take a leap, and he's not bad at all. But what you saw at the bubble, you thought, you know, okay, we can work with this, we can improve it. You know, maybe it looks like now it's going to take maybe a little bit longer for him to improve on it. And also, it's like, it was such a short turnaround anyways. It's like, how much do you expect these guys to really improve their game? You know, but hindsight's 20/20. You think that these guys are, it's like, you assume that they get better, like, gradually, like a video game. Like, okay, they're 1 year older now, so, you know, he's going to be, like, 2 points better. But I don't know about the Nuggets. I don't even know. I think who would you rather face if you were a team? Okay, here, we'll wrap it up with these questions because Clippers and Lakers, I think, are pretty obvious. But if you were the Jazz and the Suns, who would you rather face? Portland, a healthy Portland team, or this Nuggets team as we see now?
So I would rather play the Nuggets team because something is not working there. I guess my bigger confusion is that I just don't understand what isn't. And I guess part of it's like you're saying that Porter hasn't grown into what Jeremy Grant was or whatever. But as I look at them, I'm just like, man, they've got a great scoring guard. They've got one of the best guys in the league. And I don't get what's going on, but I would much rather play them than a healthy Portland. If you've got CJ firing, Dame firing, Gary Trent Jr. is playing lights out for Portland. Like, I'd much rather play Denver than Portland.
Yeah, I could see that, which shout out to Gary Trent. Gary Trent is on that short list of guys that's like, if this dude went on his own team, how well will he ball out? It's like him, Norman Powell, Jeremiah Grant was on that list last year. There's like a couple guys you watch and you're just like, damn, it's like you're great at what you do. But it's like if you just had your own team, I'm really curious to see how well you'd be playing. So, yeah, he's like on that short list. But
for sure,
I get it. Portland, I don't know. Also, too, Dame time has kind of been there. But I don't know. The Nuggets technically were there last year, but the bubble is such a big question mark. You know, it's hard to. Dame's had that consistent experience. Ooh, last thing I gotta ask, kind of sneaky. So, you have the playoff standings in front of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, who do you think out of that eight? And I know I'm putting you in a tough spot here. Who do you think is the eight playoff teams? And you could cheat too. You can even throw in the play-in team to make it 9. Because I'm looking at it, and I'm like, oh man, this is it's a close one.
So I think the first six, I think I still have San Antonio making it. So I think I have my first six is maybe in a different order, but I think they're all in. I don't see, unless, I mean, obviously it's all injury contingent because like Denver still makes it. I would imagine Dallas may leapfrog a couple teams, so they're playing better since they got Porzingis back. They have Golden State, Memphis, and New Orleans round out down to 11. 10 technically make it if you want to talk about play-in, but that's not fun. So I guess, so I said this on midweek mid-range last night, and I was thinking about who drops out, and I don't think it's San Antonio. I think the easy pick is San Antonio, and that may be because I wouldn't have had San Antonio in before the year started. My bigger take is if I'm Golden State, and I know that we're fighting to be in the play-in right now, and we got young guys, we've got Steph Curry, and we've got Draymond. Do I tell Steph Curry to like, hey, rest that hamstring for a couple, you know, like, hey, take a seat. You know, it's cool. Just go shoot on the shooting gun for a while. Like, we got this week, right? And I don't mean to say that Steve Kerr isn't competitive. And I don't mean to say that Steph Curry would ask for that, because certainly neither one's indicated that. But I do think that they see their bigger picture is they're trying to build a team that when Klay Thompson comes back next year, they're ready to roll, right? And between they get a Minnesota pick this year too, right? And
they got some big salaries on their roster right now that they could ship off with those picks. Yeah.
Right. I think that the bigger thing for them is using this as a year, not as a G League team, but to develop the Wisemans of the world to see what they can get out of Oubre. And so I could see them not, I won't say intentionally because that seems pejorative, but I could see them falling out. And I've been called a Warriors hater on Twitter before, but I think that I could see them falling out because it would feel like it's not a big deal to them right now to fall out, right? Like New Orleans wants to be in the playoffs. Memphis wants to be in the playoffs, right? And so they're currently at the, is that 8 or 9? My screen is tiny on my screen.
They're like 9th. I think Mavericks have the tiebreaker over them. That's the only reason.
Yeah. And so if I could see them dropping out of the play-in then currently would be Denver versus New Orleans and Dallas versus Memphis. I would take Denver and Dallas there between playoff experience a year ago and Luka Magic and whatnot. So I would round it out. I guess if Golden State's 9 because tiebreaker, then I guess I would round it out as it currently stands. Maybe the top few are in a different order, but
no, I agree with that. I love everything about it. Warriors are a team I could definitely see falling out just because they don't have the drive like Memphis. They missed a ton of games, so their record is a little bit weird, you know, because they're like, this is like they're 16-15. But Memphis, every time you watch them play, they play hard. They're a team that's really trying to get back. They're about to get Jaren Jackson. Zion, what if Zion and Brandon Ingram, they really go on a huge run. They're a team that wants to make it. I agree. I think Warriors possibly are the team that could fall out. I don't think Spurs drop out at all. I think they're a lock. I am like, my locks are Jazz, Suns, Clippers, Lakers, Blazers, Spurs. Nuggets, I'm only saying that because what if, you know, knock on wood, which I don't want it to happen, but what if, you know, Jokic does go down? It's like, legitimately, is that a playoff team? It's like, I don't know. But the Mavericks, it's like, if Luka misses some time, Porzingis has shown enough, it's like, maybe they'll be able to tread the water for it. But I'm just not that confident about the Nuggets. And then the Warriors, too. It's like, if Steph goes down, it's like, that's it. They're probably just going to shut it down. And so that's why I'm really confident about the Spurs. But after that, it's like, eh. But hey, man, I just want to say thank you for coming on. It was really fun shooting the breeze and talking about our contenders and pretenders.
For sure, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.